Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of Reality Check, we'll be wrapping up this year's election coverage on the podcast. Our interviewee is the host of Austin's public radio show about reproductive rights, and I'll also talk about campaign advertising and more on domestic terrorism. Samantha Bee on The Daily Show did a segment on John McCain's moment in the debate where he used scare quotes around the concept of a woman's health.
And thank you, John McCain, for finally exposing the seedy underbelly of the women's health scam. Let's face it. Women love abortions and will do anything to get one. The later the better. Hemorrhages, severe uterine infections, dying, blah, 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 blah. And while we're at it, enough with the whining about rape, incest, and incest rape. We're on to you, ladies. Those aren't a golden ticket to the abortion factory, okay?
One thing this election has done well is it's helped educate people about all the various things that can go wrong with a pregnancy that require later-term abortions. Often when talking to people about politics, they'll express the sentiment to me that the election can't get any crazier. And like the cockeyed optimist that I am, I beg to differ. We shouldn't put a limit on what heights of lunacy that Americans can reach during this election season. We are a creative people, after all. McCain and Palin finally gave in to Brian Williams' request for an interview, and it proved my theory correct. Williams asked a simple question.
Is an abortion clinic bomber a terrorist under this definition?
A terrorist is someone who commits terrorism. According to the dictionary, terrorism is the use of violence and threats to intimidate or coerce, especially for political purposes. The belief that women should be forced to bear children against their will as a way to control their sexuality and keep them as second-class citizens is a political stance. So if you threaten, firebomb, or vandalize clinics, or shoot doctors, you are committing acts of terrorism. It's almost kind of silly for Williams to ask this, akin to asking if the sky is blue. But during the silly season, you couldn't get a politician to sign on to the belief that the sky is blue if they feel a huge percentage of their base are religious fundamentalists who believe, against all evidence to the contrary, that the sky is lime green.
There's no question that Bill Ayers, via his own admittance, was one who sought to destroy our U.S. Capitol and our Pentagon. That is a domestic terrorist. There's no question there. Now, others who would want to engage in harming innocent Americans or facilities that it would be unacceptable to... I don't know if you're going to use the word terrorist there.
Here's the thing. Since the bombing started, we've been firmly instructed not to link the people who actually bomb clinics and shoot doctors with the mainstream anti-choicers who scream at women and want to ban condoms. The mainstream anti-choicers are horrible, but they aren't the sort of people who support shooting doctors, right? Sarah Palin didn't get the memo then. Because if people who support doctor shooting are a vanishingly small minority, and your workaday crazy anti-choicer is repulsed by clinic bombing, then who would she offend by calling clinic bombers terrorists? It's obvious that she thinks the numbers of anti-choicers who quietly support clinic bombing is large indeed, enough that she has to protect their feelings. The fact of the matter is, she wouldn't be entirely wrong. In the years after Eric Rudolph went on his famous bombing spree and hid in the backwoods of North Carolina, he received a lot of community support, according to Crime Library. People put up signs bragging about helping Rudolph and told reporters that they approved of his murdering. Consider then that North Carolina is a swing state. The fact of the matter is, the anti-choice movement is rife with vigilante sentiment. There's something about misogyny that makes its adherents want to be hands-on. That's the motivation driving the anti-contraception pharmacists who want to have the opportunity to scold you for buying condoms in an effort to escape the womanly fate God has planned for you. Jessica Valente made a recent video cast about this.
Ann reported this week that a pharmacy in Virginia became the seventh pharmacy to be certified officially by the anti-choice organization Pharmacists for Life International. This not only means that this pharmacy won't dispense emergency contraception the morning after pill, but also that they won't dispense any form of contraception at all because they say that it's at odds with their religious beliefs. Never mind that women have a legal right to medication. Never mind that this policy will punish rape victims and likely cause more unintended pregnancies.
It's interesting because to the public and for legal purposes, anti-choice pharmacists pretend that they believe that the birth control pill is abortion. But this most recent pharmacy shows how much of that is just a plain old lie, because the pharmacy also refuses to stock condoms. Are condoms abortion? No, not even the craziest wingnut would say that. Which is why folk hero to the hard right Eric Rudolph targeted not just abortion clinics, but gay clubs, even though there are no abortions being performed in gay clubs. Condoms, however, were probably on the premises. I'd like to welcome Katie Vitale to the program. Katie has a show similar to this one called Issues for Your Tissues, but hers is on the actual airwave, Co-op, the public radio station here in Austin, Texas. Issues was temporarily suspended by the radio station with an unfortunate timing incident right before the election. Welcome to RealityCast, Katie.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. So tell me a little about your show and the suspension at Co-op.
Well, I like to think that Issues for Your Tissues is the definitive discourse on sexual health and reproductive justice on the airwaves here in Austin. We like to focus on local politics and state politics, but there's so much going on federally that we end up talking about that a lot, too.
And what happened with the suspension?
I was suspended on October 17th for turning in a report 4 days late, and my suspension was initially for 4 weeks. And after the hearing last night, it was changed to 3 weeks. But I am still suspended, and I am the only programmer still suspended for this.
And it was just a scheduling error?
Yes. The FCC requires that we keep certain documents on file for the public to review at any time. So theoretically, you could walk into any radio station and ask to see a public file of documents, and they would be required to provide that for you. And the document that the station needed from me was something that was to go into that file.
So you'll be back on the air in 3 weeks, though.
Yeah, it's looking like the 12th will be my next day back.
How do you feel about the mainstream media's coverage of reproductive rights issues as somebody who covers these issues from an alternative media perspective?
Well, I feel it's a little lackluster, to say the least. I remember this summer after the Health and Human Services Department put out that memo or, you know, leaked, and here are my little air quotes, leaked the memo on redefining birth control or contraception. I didn't hear about that from any kind of news organization at any point, and I didn't even hear it from the large nonprofits until weeks later when I received emails encouraging me to contact the Health and Human Services Department to tell them that they shouldn't redefine contraception. So, I mean, not just, it seems there's a dearth of information available to women about things directly affecting reproductive health and justice.
Abortion has become a big issue this election season. Do you feel that it's been getting fairly covered, or is it covered enough in terms of the differences between the candidates, or what are your opinions on that?
Well, I think that it's not covered enough. And that's not to say that we are not clear on what the positions of the candidates are. We know where each of them stand in their overall respect of a woman's right to choose. However, I feel that the heart of the matter isn't being discussed. And that's something that was lightly approached in the third presidential debate. And we saw the attitude that one of the candidates took towards women's health. And just by saying the term, the misnomer pro-abortion, we saw a little bit more clearly where Senator McCain stands. And we can see clearly the differences, but we're not getting to the heart of the issue, and that's unintended pregnancies and how every conservative social policy reflects or I guess produces a substantial need or increases the need for abortion care services. You know, here in Texas, we're funneling money away from family planning and directing that towards crisis pregnancy centers, and then we're surprised when families aren't planned. So I don't think that the inherent incongruencies of the social conservative policy agenda regarding women's health are made clear. And I think that Senator Obama had tried to approach that in the last debate, but I don't know that anybody was ready for the nuance and the clarity or the lesson I think that everybody needs to hear. And that's about, you know, preventing the unintended pregnancies.
What do you think we could do to make sure that sort of message, that the public has the groundwork to even understand that kind of message?
Well, I know it's really easy to just say get involved, but I know that everyone or anyone who lives long enough is going to have to deal with reproductive issues of some sort, whether that's trying to control birth or get a birth or having to do with anything you can think of, we can relate back to this, or for anybody, all people will be affected by this. So I want all people to be able to talk about it openly with each other. That's how we start this off, having conversations with each other. And then from there, being able to look at the positions and policies that are put forth by our legislators. I think that's really important, especially in Texas, as we get an F for women's health from NARAL Pro-Choice Texas, from other organizations, because of the lack of attention that women's health gets, not just family planning and reproductive health, but in general, you know, Texas has the highest number of uninsured people in the nation. So I think we start off by having conversations with those around us. It's good for everyone to understand what they feel and then be able to take those thoughts to our respective legislators, because they're the ones who are going to have the most impact on this policy.
So you're based in Texas, but you do cover issues that are kind of nationwide. And while Texas doesn't, as far as I know I voted already, so Texas doesn't have any propositions on the ballot regarding reproductive health, but other states like Colorado, South Dakota, and California do. What are your thoughts, for instance, on the proposition in California to define fertilized eggs as legal persons?
I don't think that's a good move, because they, by definition, aren't, well, I guess redefining would change that definition. I don't feel that is the move that we need to make. And if the point, we have to look at what the intended consequence of such a policy would be. So in this case, I think the intended consequence or effect of this kind of legislation would be to prevent any kind of scientific research to be conducted with that material, with that biological material. So I just can't condone restrictions on scientific research that could have benefits for so many from this point forward. So I'm really opposed to that. So I think that if people are in California and able to vote, you know, I'd like them to research that for themselves and see how restrictive that would be to, you know, scientific benefit for us all.
One of the things that's going to be coming up one of the things that's on voters' minds as they're hitting the booth is the fact that the next president is going to probably be appointing some Supreme Court justices. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but Texas is one of the states that has a trigger law in it, right, that will ban abortion immediately upon the overturn of Roe versus Wade. So how, as somebody with a Texas focus, do you prepare for what might be an inevitability at this point?
Well, I cross my fingers and hope that it really isn't an inevitability that we get two anti-choice court justices. That's the first thing. So working that and helping to make sure that we have people in places that will not make those choices. So if all else fails and we end up with two more anti-choice justices on the Supreme Court, I think I'm really at a loss of what has to happen. It's really sad to me. I wonder how many women will have to die before some action is taken. But as this gets as this possible future gets closer, it makes me want to go to law school. So I can argue.
Well, and the woman that argued Roe the first time was a Texas lawyer. So
yes, she was Sarah Weddington. We're lucky enough to have her in Austin, and she is an adjunct professor at the University of Texas. So we're lucky to have her in the Lone Star State.
Well, thank you very much for coming on to Reality Check, Katie. You can check out Issues for Your Tissues at Co-op Radio in Austin, Texas. They do have a website. Do you have any kind of archiving that people can listen to?
I do have some shows archived on my blog. It's Issues, the number 4, tissues.livejournal.com. So there are some shows there that people can listen to, and I am continually adding to that. Since we're a small, community station, many of us do our own archiving of shows when we can get digital recordings of those. So to make a short answer long, yes.
Since this is the last podcast before the election, I figured I'd do one last ad roundup covering what campaign ads are covering sexual and reproductive health issues. First off, Prop 8 in California, which would ban same-sex marriage and annul already existing same-sex marriages, has been the source of heavy advertising. A lot of people are putting a lot of money into this hotly contested ballot proposition. The best ads, for my money, are the ones that mimic the Apple versus PC ads.
Hi, I'm Noah on Prop 8.
And I'm Yes.
Yes, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm protecting this couple from gays and lesbians getting married. Don't worry, everyone. You're safe.
Actually, we're fine. Same-sex marriages have been legal here for months and nothing's happened.
Okay, right. You're telling me it doesn't undermine the sanctity of your marriage?
No, we're fine.
Not really. See? They're cool.
Clever. It rightly paints the opponents of gay marriage as uptight whiners who are hysterical over something that isn't their business. Anti-Prop 8 ads have brought in star power, too. Ellen DeGeneres, so famous that she goes by just her first name, has done such an ad.
I got to do something this year that I thought I'd never be able to do. I got married. It was the happiest day of my life. There are people out there raising millions of dollars to try to take that right away from me. You've seen their ads on TV. They're twisting the truth, and they're trying to scare you. I believe in fairness. I believe in compassion. I believe in equality for all people.
I like it because she draws attention to the fact that her already existing marriage will be annulled if people vote yes on Prop 8. Taking something away from people that they already have seems even worse than preventing them from having it in the first place. I was going to play an opposition ad to show you how unfair and silly they're being, but I'll do you one better. A group of people took one opposition ad and replaced the words same-sex and gay with the word interracial, so you can see what's really going on here.
Based on past experience, those who oppose interracial marriage on religious grounds will be increasingly labeled as intolerant and subjected to legal penalties or social ridicule. This won't be limited to California, as its powerful influence is felt across the country.
Did you know that nearly all public schools in California provide education about health and sexuality? If Prop 8 fails, children will be taught that marriage is between Party A and Party B, regardless of race.
Of course, in Colorado, you have a ballot initiative to grant the status of personhood to fertilized eggs. Many people who want to vote yes just think of this as a backdoor way to ban abortion. They don't realize that it's an assault on birth control and perhaps a way to make you criminally liable if you miscarry. And it's openly anti-childbirth. Illinois politician Jill Morgenthaler describes that potential downfall from a similar bill that was presented in Illinois.
But Peter Roskam's plan would force couples who rely on in vitro fertilization to carry every unused fertilized egg to term. Or find someone who will. It's just scary.
Sometimes they have to make dozens because many don't live. Will women who use in vitro fertilization be prosecuted if their bodies reject any? Now for the Doolian abortion ads. A Minnesota ad against Al Franken parades out the anti-choice belief that abortion is killing children.
Every day in America, almost 4,000 unborn children die from abortion. In Minnesota, 39 innocent children are lost every day. 39 children, every day.
Another ad from the How Much Time campaign calls the anti-choice bluff, pointing out that if abortion is killing children and should be banned as murder, that makes 30 to 40% of American women murderers who should go to jail.
If that happens, 21 states will immediately move to make abortion a crime. And women will be treated like criminals.
Of course, anti-choicers say they wouldn't prosecute women for abortion. But if you kill a child, you are a murderer. That's beyond dispute. So how come they don't think child killers are murderers in this case? I have to conclude they don't actually think abortion is child killing. One last ad I found really powerful was an ad highlighting Joe Biden's work fighting violence against women. I liked it because it showed how hard it is for abused women to leave.
Even today, people will say to me, you know, I just hate that battering happens, but why don't those women leave?
I didn't know how to leave. I was scared for my life. I was scared for my son's life.
Can we guarantee their safety when they leave? Until recently, I'd say leave and go where?
Eventually, I did leave him. But he was coming to my job. He was harassing me. He had broken out 3 windows in my car, my mom's back window in her car. After he had broken out the windows in my car, he came to my job and poured gasoline inside my car.
And then he shot her. Thankfully, she recovered. Thankfully, it happened after the Violence Against Women Act was passed, which ensured that her attacker got 25 years in prison, making his victim safe, finally. And remember, after this week, we get to go a whole year, maybe more, before campaign commercials start up again. And now for the wisdom of Wingnuts. Bill Cunningham, a Clear Channel radio host, accused poor women of deliberately refusing to take birth control to bilk the state out of money.
It isn't about color. It's about government paying for bad behavior. Most responsible couples engage in birth control so they don't bring children into the world they cannot afford. Among the so-called noble poor in America, just the opposite is true. Birth control is not used so illegitimate children can be brought into the world, so the mom can get more checks in the mail from the government.
Even from the pace and cadence of his voice, you can tell he's reciting a fairy tale, not actually speaking about a verifiable reality. If poor women were truly refusing to use birth control so that they could get welfare checks, then the abortion rate wouldn't be as high as it is, full stop. Even anti-choice organizations note that the high percentage of women having abortion report that they can't afford to have a baby, which wouldn't be true if babies were the gravy train that Cunningham claims they are. Tune in next week for the first post-election reality cast. And regardless of who you vote for, I'd urge you to hit the polls and make your voice heard. If you see any problems at your polling station, call 1-866-R-VOTE and report the problem. Our democracy works best if everyone has a voice.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.